It's Helping Hand, weekly feature airing statewide on HPR1 stations on Fridays as part of our afternoon drive broadcast of All Things Considered, and then appearing online at hawaiipublicradio.org. Every week, Helping Hand puts the spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to people with disabilities and vulnerable people and animals. I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we are thrilled to have a returning guest organization, Elephant Action League. This is a nonprofit that actually had some really cool experiences happen to them since they were last on the program, some recognition by different law enforcement agencies. What they do is unique. They do undercover investigations to develop actionable intelligence about wildlife crimes. Last year, you may recall, they were our guests on Helping Hand to discuss a mission that exposed the chain of custody of rhino horn, primarily headed into China. And today, it's another investigation that they've completed this year. It was called Operation Fake Gold. It has exposed another chain of custody headed to China. This time, it's the Toto Aba swim bladder in high demand there in China, the pursuit of which has pushed a critically endangered porpoise, the vaquita, to the very edge of extinction, reportedly down to just 30 individuals swimming off the coast of Mexico. Here to detail that crisis and how they developed the intelligence in their report, and also China's role in the destruction not only of the vaquita, but how this one country seems to be at the center for so many extinction crises, it's Andrea Crosta. He is the executive director and co-founder of Elephant Action League, and he is our guest right now. Hey, Andrea, thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure.
It's a great pleasure for us, too. And before we hear about this Operation Fake Gold report, for the many people listening who the name Elephant Action League is new to, explain how you guys operate with a unique way of tackling wildlife crimes that goes way beyond defending elephants.
Yes, despite our name, Elephant Action League, it's elephant for us is a symbol. As I always say, one of the reasons I call this organization Elephant Action League is because elephants have characteristics that I like to see in people around me, so in my team especially. So that's why we use elephants as a symbol. But in reality, our wildlife crime division, which is made up almost entirely of former law enforcement and FBI and CIA. So we are focused on intelligence collection and investigation on a variety of wildlife crime related issues, you know, rhino horn, ivory, live animals, pangolins, orangutans, illegal fishing, like in this case in Mexico. Because when we started the Elephant Action League, I saw a clear gap in the way we were fighting environmental crime in general, which is without intelligence. And I saw that it was missing. You know, environmental crime is the fourth largest criminal endeavor on the planet. Billions and billions of dollars go to very dangerous people and criminals, and yet we fight with no intelligence. Unlike other global threats like terrorism, like narcotrafficking, like weapons of mass destruction. So I thought that was time to bring to the table also intelligence to defend the planet. And what we do is basically go after criminals, wildlife criminals, environmental criminals, poaching and trafficking syndicates, international criminal networks, and try to help law enforcement to take them down.
And the way that you do that with these undercover investigations yields evidence that you can then hand them over. And one of the cool things was, not that long after you were last on, I was reading online about how in Thailand, some of the intelligence that you were able to get them relating to the rhino horn trafficking was in fact utilized by Thai authorities and became something of a success. Give a little plug to how that happened.
Exactly. That's a great example of the way we work in some countries like Thailand. We have we developed a great relationship with local law enforcement, in this case the Royal Thai Customs and Police, and we identify a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, two important wildlife traffickers. In fact, I think two of the most important wildlife traffickers in Southeast Asia, which in itself is already probably the most important wildlife crime trafficking hubs, basically wildlife crime hubs in the world. So we investigated, we collect intelligence for almost 8 months on these two different kingpins, two different representatives from those two criminal networks in Thailand, trafficking that have been trafficking for years and years, an incredible amount of ivory, rhino horns, live animals, pangolins, orangutans, you name it. And when at a certain moment, when we had enough intelligence, we had enough information, we start a collaboration with the Thai authorities, and that ultimately led to the arrest of both individuals. And it was a big blow to their respective criminal networks that were, you know, importing illegally, smuggling, of course, all this illegal product from Africa and Indonesia. And these two individuals are still in jail. And we are, of course, continuing to work on the networks. But that's a clear example of how our work could be could actually help a lot the work of law enforcement.
And how so these undercover investigations clearly can yield some valuable evidence. So when people make donations to this nonprofit, that's how they spend the money. And in addition to donations and contributions that people and foundations make, how else do you guys get funds?
Well, no, just the source of our funding are just foundations and single individuals. We don't receive any money, of course, from any government or government entities. That we will, you know, it will for us, our integrity and independence is a very, very important. So our only source of funding are, you know, foundation. There are a few U.S. foundations that have been supporting us for years, and many, many people around the world.
And that means also, Andrea, that if there are people who are listening who are, because different people are listening who have different kinds of expertise, and that's one of the great things, as you already know, about getting your word out, is you never know who might be able to help you. So if there's anyone listening who has fundraising experience and knows how to tap into grants, and perhaps they know that there may be grants that are based around doing things to help animals out, and maybe they wanted to share any of that information with you about specifics, you'd be eager to hear from them, I assume.
Absolutely, it will be great. Actually, we are, we don't have a big office. We are, most of our people are in the field. So, generally, for us, is a challenge to raise money because we are maybe not, we don't have, you know, the professionalities that big NGOs have. Of course, they have many, many people just working for fundraising, and also because it's not, in general, it's not easy to fundraise to fight wildlife crime, you know, to fight criminals. In general, I think the one of the problems is that the international community, donors, media are disproportionately focused on the very two end of the illegal supply chains. The very beginning, you know, the poachers, the anti-poaching. There is a whole movement around against the poachers. Let's jail the poachers. Let's kill the poachers. But very often, I assure you, I met many of them are very poor people trying to make a living. Or at the very end, at the other end of the supply chain, which is consumer markets like China. Let's do like awareness campaigns and try to change the mind of the Chinese, for example. It takes a lot of time. It will take at least a generation and a half to see some effects. It is very, you know, generally the people is focused on those two ends. For us, it's always a challenge to find supporters, friends, and money to work in the middle of the supply chain where the real traffickers, the real enablers and drivers actually thrive.
And that is exactly what you guys did with this vaquita, which is an animal, I must say, has gotten, since we last talked, gotten more and more exposure, and probably because the crisis is just so heartbreaking. This is a tiny porpoise, basically, and they're being caught as bycatch, as it's called. So there's a quest to cash in on another fish's demand in China, and not for the fish, actually, but just a small part of it. It's swim bladder, prized in China, worth more than gold, the Toto Aba fish's swim bladder. And so if you can, for folks who have probably heard these stories, explain the bizarre relationship between the Toto Aba fish and the vaquita porpoise, which is suffering because of its swim bladder.
Yes. So the vaquita is at the moment the rarest marine mammals in the world. We are talking about way less than 30 individuals probably left in the wild, but we are not 100% sure how many, because it's really difficult to find them and count them. And they were, I mean, they were. They are kind of new to science, because the vaquita has only been known to science since 1958, if I remember well. So, and the first census was in 97, and they found that there were only 600 left already. So it's a species that comes already with some, with some problems, let's say. But they were okay until a few years ago. The Chinese, found out, or better, they knew it before, but in China, the consumer powers is growing very fast. We have now around 400 million people in the so-called middle class, and 900 million waiting to become middle class. So it's an incredible amount of potential consumers. They are crazy in general for swim bladders from all fishes around the world. They import that. Thousands of tons of swim bladders every year through Hong Kong. The Totoaba swim bladder became the top, the very top, the best, the best swim bladder that you can have in the world. And that put an enormous pressure, of course, on the population of Totoaba fish in Baja California, which in the meantime became endangered also itself. The problem is that the only way to catch this Totoaba fish is to use specific nets that are actually very gill nets. They are actually very expensive, $3,000-$4,000 per net. Very strong. They can basically kill anything. They can entrap anything, and that's the problem. Because apart from entrapping Totoaba, which is illegal, they're also killing vaquitas, but they're also killing dolphins and sharks and turtles and birds. So they are real killing machines that kill the marine life in Baja California, and that and this is an enormous problem, because in the meantime, the whole thing is so profitable, so much money is involved now that real cartels got into the pictures. And this is exactly what our investigation found out. Former and current narco traffickers teaming up with the owner of the fishing cooperatives and with Chinese businessmen living in Mexico. They form so-called Totoaba cartels, and they are and they change actually the economy of the whole region, because you can imagine a regular fisherman. Fishing shrimps, he makes usually $450-$500 per month. One single Totoaba swim bladder is $5,000. So you can imagine the temptation, and you can imagine how the whole thing changed the socio-economical texture of the area.
Wow, that is unbelievable. One swim bladder, $5,000. And why, when you're describing that that they like swim bladders from all over, is like what, why do they like? I mean, forgive my ignorance on it, because I've studied the issue, but it's kind of like a lot of these things, you kind of dismiss the end wildlife product because you know it probably doesn't have any value. Kind of like rhino horn. It's like, well, I know why they like the rhino horn, and you kind of wave your hand. It's so ridiculous. As for the swim bladder, what benefit do they, I mean, do they think it has some medicinal property?
Yes, exactly. Scientifically, it's unproved, of course, but each fish, each swim bladder from a specific fish has a specific effect. So if you want to, I don't know, fix your stomach, you look for a specific swim bladder from a specific fish. If you have another problem, you go for another swim bladder. In particular, the Totoaba swim bladder, according to the Chinese traditional medicine, is good for your blood and is good for pregnant women. So there's a big market of rich people buying Totoaba for this reason. But now the crazy part of this whole story is that once it's dried up, the Totoaba swim bladder can last for a long, long time. I mean, decades. So it becomes so expensive that that they are not consuming it anymore. They're actually keeping it as an investment. And actually, we found out that the Chinese nationals in Mexico are using Totoaba swim bladder trafficking actually to launder money and to send back home millions of dollars in black money, cash. And then they keep it. They keep it. They store it as a sort of investment because it became incredibly expensive. You know, the fisherman gets about $5,000 per kilo. But in China, the same swim bladder on the black market, it is sold for $25, $30, $40, even $50,000 per kilo. We saw and picture swim bladders of $100,000 just because they were 10 years old. So the older they get, the more pricier they get. So it's a whole weird industry around this swim bladder.
How big is the Totoaba fish?
It's big. It's a big, big fish. It's like the female can easily get to 3 meters. And actually, only the swim bladders from the females are actually those that the real expensive stuff. The consumers are the real market is for the swim bladders coming from females. So because the females tend to be much bigger than males.
And the rest of the fish, they just discard it, kind of like a rhinoceros after they've killed it for its horn?
Exactly. Back in the days, there was actually a sort of a sport fishing industry in Baja around Totoaba because it's a very tasty fish, like kind of a sea bass, big sea bass. So, you know, American fishermen were, you know, coming down and you know, fishing Totoaba. But unfortunately, the illegal trade of the swim bladder destroy everything, including the industry of sport fishing. And now it's just about Totoaba. And because it's illegal, they usually get the fish at sea out from the net. They eviscerate the fish at sea. They just throw away the body. And then if you walk around in Baja, in those areas during high fishing season, you walk on the beach and you every few meters, you stumble upon a carcass of a Totoaba, many, 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 because they just throw it in the water.
It is a really heartbreaking story. And so they've made that animal, so the Totoaba is also now endangered?
Yes, they say so. Actually, there is no reliable data on the Totoaba, but it's also the Totoaba is in technically speaking, appendix one, CITES appendix one. So you cannot fish it. You cannot, of course, trade it. But you know, you have to understand that in those in Mexico in general, but especially in that region of Mexico, is the whole thing is pretty lawless. I mean, we know for sure that those Totoaba cartels have on their payroll, you know, almost the entire police corps over there in the region. So it's a very dangerous area. I think it was the most dangerous place I ever worked in my life, more than Central Africa, more than other places I worked in the past.
And so you guys, real quick before we hear about that work, just because your explanation spawned one other question in my head, because another thing we talk about is the bear bile industry, which is a really even more heartbreaking, wasn't bad enough. That's even worse. And when you're talking about the bladder, is that sort of the connection? Because that's like the bear bile, that comes from a bear's bladder too. So it's sort of like this like a obsession with bladder-related things. Is that a connection?
Yes, I mean it's part of the Chinese traditional medicine. There are many products from nature that some of them are legal, some others are illegal, like of course bile, like a Totoaba bladder, like rhino horn, and it's not really an obsession. It's really part of the Chinese cultural heritage. You know, it's part of what they eat, what they do, what they think, what they give value to. In general, they have a very, very different values towards nature, different than ours. They see, you know, even in Chinese, animal, one of the ways to call an animal in Chinese is actually moving object. That's the translation, and it explains a lot. The the approach that they have to wildlife, to nature. It is there to be used, you know, for our consumption.
Yeah, that does paint an awful picture. And so are there any other countries or groups of consumers besides China? Like, so when you guys go there, you went undercover. I guess that's a good time to explain how what you guys did over there to sort of go undercover, track what was happening. And in that explanation, I guess you could answer, are there any other countries or groups of consumers besides China that are getting this Totoaba swim bladder?
Yeah, no, there's no other. All the Totoaba is going to China. Is actually most of the Totoaba is actually going to a specific region of China, Guangdong, with the city of Guangzhou, because that over there is the, you know, the strongest demand. The way we work in Mexico, but it is also the way we work on many other other, you know, illegal supply chains of wildlife products. We usually create three groups of people that work together at the same time. One is usually led by me. In this case, in Mexico, my right arm was a very experienced former FBI agent. We also had a former captain of Sea Shepherd. So we create a group, and our work was to be in the field, undercover, but not deep cover. We were kind of, you know, we had, of course, a fake profile, a fake legend, a fake story, but we were not that invisible, also because at the same time, a big production company was actually following us, because, you know, in January you will see everyone will see this big documentary on about this issue, co-produced by Leonardo DiCaprio. So we were there. Our work was mostly to collect information wherever we can, recruit people, approach fishermen, including illegal fishermen, but also talk with local enforcement, interact with Sea Shepherd, for example, extract various kind of intelligence. Then a second group is made up entirely of Chinese nationals, Taiwanese, who work for us. They are very experienced undercover investigators. We are actually using them all over the world. And their job was actually real undercover, was to engage as close as possible the Chinese traders in Mexico. They pose as buyers or as Chinese businessmen. They are trained in the use of undercover cameras and audio device, recording devices. And their job was to extract as much intelligence as possible from these Chinese illegal traders, to record the conversation and to film, of course, to bring back home evidence, basically. And then we have a third group of people back home. They are very experienced crime analysts, and their job is actually to make sense of what we find in the field, which is, you know, the analytical part of our job is equally important as the one in the field, to understand what you got. You have to imagine, for example, the Chinese team produce an incredible amount of material, like video and audio, so we have to translate everything from Chinese to English. We have to transcribe everything. We have to analyze every single word, name, telephone number, email, location, everything. So it's a very long work, but at the end, if you do it right, you produce real actionable intelligence that law enforcement can use.
Considering the corruption that you found there in Mexico, and I guess it's obvious, yeah, I mean, that's a good question here, because it's both, you could stop, it's similar, I guess, to the whole rhino thing. You can either stop the killing there in off the shore of Mexico, or you can also try to stop the buying back in China. So considering the corruption you found in Mexico, how are you using this intelligence? Like, who is the reliable partner you can get it to?
Yeah, that's a good example. And actually, the, you know, where you have to hit is not the fishermen. So over there, I spent nights and nights and nights at sea chasing illegal fishermen, also on board both Sea Shepherd, but also the Mexican Navy, who kindly guest us on board. And I could see with my own eyes, it's impossible to stop them at sea. They outsmart the Navy every single night. So over there, you cannot stop them. And the minute they land on shore, they become even more, they're covered, they're protected. So no way there. On the other end of the supply chain, it's also very difficult to change the mentality of Chinese consumers so fast. It will happen in a generation or two. So actually, the right point to hit along the supply chain, and our work is often exactly this one, to study, to assess, to investigate the entire supply chain, transnational supply chain, and understand where it makes sense to hit, where we have the best chances to disrupt the supply chain. The best point in this case is actually in Mexico, but are not Mexican, are the Chinese. So Chinese nationals living in Mexico, some of them are second, third generation, they speak fluently Spanish. They are not criminals per se, they are businessmen doing a lot of legal and illegal stuff at the same time. This is the point to hit. This is where you have maximum leverage. And this is where we suggest that law enforcement should hit. So we gave them a lot of information about those Chinese. Because if you neutralize those people, the entire supply chain breaks down. So there would be no one buying Totoaba in Mexico. So the Mexican part of the Totoaba cartels will not find any more buyers. And also this Chinese national in Mexico are those who have more to lose because they're also doing legal stuff. So you can force them to stop. This is my hope that after all the information we gave Mexican authorities is exactly what they are doing, I hope.
It's incredible. It's so inspiring. All these people doing this. To listen to you explain it is just it's just breathtaking, really. And you answer a lot of questions about how it works. And dialing back from this particular investigation, and again, we're so grateful to have Andrea Crosta, the executive director, co-founder of Elephant Action League, as our return guest on Helping Hand today, and talking about this remarkable Operation Fake Gold undercover investigation that showed how Mexican fishermen are basically being exploited by Chinese businessmen and Chinese traders that are in Mexico and then taking this stuff out of Mexico back to China. Dialing back from this investigation and thinking at the Asia Pacific in general, as the leader of a major investigative nonprofit that you are on the front lines of tracking the smuggling of multiple endangered species, can you kind of explain to people listening, because clearly you're an expert on this, can you explain the role that China and Vietnam are playing in the extinction crises beyond just the vaquita, the pangolins, the rhinos, the elephants, the tigers, and the other vulnerable species? Because it almost seems like there's some ray of hope in that, because if it's just one country with this massive growing middle class, that while it's really a sad story, the flip side is maybe it's because it's concentrated in one country, perhaps effort could yield to some kind of results.
Yes, it is. I mean, it is. China is at the same time, I think, an incredible threat to the planet, to nature, to wildlife. At the same time, is actually the only hope we have to save it because we have somehow to start working with them and change their mentality. Otherwise, everything is lost. Almost every single wildlife product, illegal wildlife product we work on ends up in China. And here you have two different kind of, so you have China, which is the destination market for pretty much everything you can imagine right now. The main, not the only, but by far the main. I'm talking about ivory, rhino horn, pangolins, live animals from Africa, illegal log, illegal timber, illegal fishing, illegal fish. So anything you can imagine. And then you have the incredible important role of the so-called transit countries, such as Vietnam, Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, Myanmar, Southeast Asia, basically, where and they become very important in enabling the smuggling of all this stuff into China. Why? Because China somehow, especially during the past years, got a little bit more assertive and they're paying a little bit more attention to what gets in their country. So it became dangerous for international trafficking networks and syndicates to smuggle this product directly to China. So they prefer, during the years, they prefer to go through transit countries. And in those countries, in those transit countries, especially Vietnam and Laos, now you have the most important wildlife traffickers in the world. They never go to Africa. They never go to Mexico. They do everything from there, and they have been trafficking everything you can imagine for decades. So they are really, really good in placing orders in other countries. Anything. I want a ton of ivory. I want 10 rhino horns. I want 500 kilos of pangolins. I want totoaba. I want illegal timber. And then they take care of you know, the second part of the smuggling route, which is somehow sending all these things to China, to their, you know, their trusted importers. And so this is the scenario now where we are operating. You know, they are so sophisticated, they are so good in what they are doing, that if you don't fight back at the same level, meaning using crime specialists or people like we use, like former CIA, former FBI, there's no hope to be ahead of them. You know, law enforcement will always be behind them, like right now.
And you've also been aided, and it's worth saying, and also as we talk about ways that people can help you guys, one of the ways that this Totoaba / Vaquita investigation was successful, one of the ways, obviously, all of the rhino horn investigations and the ivory, the pangolin investigations you do, it relies on people of Chinese origin, people from China and related countries who are obviously completely opposed to this wildlife trade, who risk their lives to go out on the line to stop this stuff. Talk about those people who are your partners and the ways that when people listening, because there's a lot of people, we're right here in the Asia Pacific, there's so many people listening who have contacts in the countries you've just named, and put out the your call for trying to line up support.
Absolutely. These people are our sort of silent, invisible heroes, and I always say, you know, I'm more and more, you know, most of this work cannot be done by me or my team from the US or from Europe. It has to be done by them. When you engage those traffickers, and most of the time those traffickers are Chinese, you need another Asian, another Chinese, in order to be credible, and they are doing an incredible good job. I mean, without them we could not do what we do. And certainly we are very interested in recruiting more collaborators. I would never send someone unprepared to the field, because I one of my responsibilities is to design this operation in this safest possible way for everyone, including the undercover teams. But most of the times, if not all the times, when especially the Chinese and Taiwanese teams, when they are in the field engaging a trafficker doing their work, they are on their own. If something goes wrong, I have no way to help them, other than I know exactly where they are. But so it's always difficult, if not impossible, for us to work with volunteers because it's dangerous. But certainly we can train new people, or they can help us, for example, with the translations. They can help us going through open sources like social medias and websites to, you know, collect intelligence written in other languages, published in other countries, because there's a lot to be over there, and we are sometimes overwhelmed by work. So yes, absolutely, I'd be happy to sort of acquire new talents from those countries.
And another part, when what you were just saying, that as in between when you were last on and now, something I've learned is really critical. Another way that this is, because sometimes people go, why is all this happening? You know, they think either that, because I talk about it a lot, and they think, wow, you're so worked up about this. Is this just a new passion for you? And I say, well, no, it's like there's a perfect storm of events that have changed right in the world. And so you have these growing middle classes we just described. But another way that people can help you is this other threat, which is the internet. A lot of the sales are, they utilize the internet. A lot of things get done online. So when it comes to people supporting you and being able to decipher and get into some of these other marketplaces, I would imagine that is, because you talk about being able to get into another language And and so that's another way people can help you too, is like to try to identify and bring out intelligence about these online marketplaces.
Exactly. Pay attention. Now, you know, Facebook that is used a lot in the Western world, but also in South America, for example, WeChat that is used in China and Asia, Instagram, they became the marketplace for a lot of those illicit wildlife products. And it's incredible how those companies cannot stop it. I understand the challenge, as not all that you see on those websites are is illegal, of course. Some are legal. So that's why it's difficult for those big high-tech companies to understand what is legal, what is not legal. But certainly they became a very important tool for wildlife buyers and sellers. And we actually get very often interesting intelligence, interesting information about even well-known traders, well-known traffickers. They are incredibly open sometimes. They don't care much. Probably they are very, comfortable in what they are doing, with very little, law enforcement on them. So they publish stuff. They are very active on social media, and this is for sure an incredible, very important source of information in general, even to understand what's going on.
And in other ways that people can help you, anything else besides, obviously, when people donate to you guys. In general, it can support the funding of these specific investigations that he has spoken about. It can provide equipment or resources, you name. And just to put the call out, because so basically people listening could donate and sponsor specific missions. They could sponsor equipment that you need. The floor is yours in the ways that you want to inspire people to support you guys.
Exactly. So we have a very, very low administrative cost because, on purpose, I come from the high tech sector and I was an entrepreneur myself. And I also come from security intelligence. And so I tend to run things in a very efficient way. So on purpose, we have a small office here in Los Angeles because most of our people is actually scattered around the world. And this is how we keep, general cost very low. And, most of the money goes to the field to help those investigation and intelligence gathering operation that you can understand for specific issues that they cannot stop. They should not stop. Okay. That's our main challenge. You create a structure, an intelligence infrastructure with sources and investigators and a lot of efforts to get the information that are needed. And so that cannot stop. It has to keep going. And that's the challenge that sometimes we have with some donors that like to just sponsor a specific project from January to December. And then the year after they move to another project. So for us is a big challenge to keep going this intelligence collection operation in the field. And this is the essence of intelligence. Intelligence, unlike investigation, intelligence must continue 24/7 harvesting of information every time. So yes, the money, and right now we are working a lot on the illegal supply chain of ivory and rhino and pangolins from Southern Africa all the way to China through Southeast Asia. This is a very, very big project and another interesting project we are working on, and you are actually the first to know because we decided to make it public only this week. We have been working the whole past year on the poaching and trafficking of jaguar parts in Latin America. There is a big, there is a very significant poaching and trafficking issue in Latin America of jaguar parts to be sold in China as tiger parts, because in China they are crazy for tiger bones and tiger teeth and tiger and jaguars. Unfortunately for them, they are the only big cats that can be sold as tiger because they have big teeth and big bones. So we have been working a lot and will be working a lot for the next 2-3 years on this interesting but very urgent problem.
And people can support you by reposting. A simple way that people can support you is by following you guys on social media and online and reposting and sharing the various materials that you offer.
Absolutely. This is a big help, actually, bigger than what you think, because, you know, it's we are operating in a sort of a niche. So not many people, even people that, you know, that, who loves nature and they are familiar with the problem, environmental problem around the world, they are usually not so knowledgeable, update about what is wildlife crime and what is the meaning and the impact on what of wildlife crime on nature. So just by reposting and sharing, you know, things from our social medias is an incredible help.
So we've outlined a lot of ways that people can support you. And you were just at the recent Illegal Wildlife Trade Conference in London. Sometimes these things get a bad rap because you hear there's declarations and non-binding agreements that come from them. And yet the poaching just keeps going. And not long before we spoke, the pangolins went through just an awful week. I mean, it was just bust after bust after bust. Yeah. It was almost too much to keep seeing. You know, the scale of it is it's really upsetting. So how much good do those conferences do or don't do to help the animals, do you think?
This is a very difficult question, and I'm looking for a way to be as politically correct as possible.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm sorry about that.
No, because I have the opposite problem. I'm usually very outspoken because I feel like I represent those animals, like my clients, so to speak. So I have to speak the truth. But sometimes the truth is difficult to, you know, to hear it, to digest it. And so this conference, in particular, the London conference with that, you know, manage to gather countries from around the world, and they make all kind of pledges and declarations. It's good that it's happening, of course. It's better than nothing. And at least you force government to be more and more aware of the problem and hold them somehow accountable. The problem, as you said, is that you hear a lot of promises and pledges and this and that and millions of dollars that are... But then at the end of the day, the situation is still really bad, conference after conference. So I'm always amazed that this conference has listened to all the different stakeholders, governments and big NGOs and this and that, and they all somehow claim success. They tell you the situation, yes, is bad, but, you know, we have been successful in this and in that. And I am always a little bit puzzled. I mean, I say, okay, if you just come here and listen to you, it almost looks like we have the situation under control, when in reality, not at all.
Right.
You know, we have been losing 35,000 elephants per year in the past 5-10 years. We have been losing almost 1,500 rhinos, maybe 1,300 rhinos every year. There are more tigers in captivity than in the wild. So tell me exactly where we are successful, because I don't see it.
Right. No, that's what I was saying about those pangolin shipments. It's just like the scale of it is so it just doesn't encourage you when you see it, and to have to talk about it, it just makes me hang my head, because I just feel for especially the pangolins. It just seems so vulnerable.
One of the main reasons, if not the most important reason, why we have been collectively failing in the past year is that nobody is doing intelligence. They are all focused only on awareness campaigns and kill the poachers. That's
right.
It.
Right.
Most of the money, the attention, and nobody wants to do serious work on the real puppeteers, the real kimpings, the real enablers of this awful thing.
Do you think, final question, Prince William, I'm always, when I hear him speak, it gives me hope, because it's like these two.
Yeah, I agree.
Between
him. I like very much. At the London conference, his speech was the best, actually. Was the most sincere, I think.
He's special, huh? He and his brother are really, they have to be among the strongest, most visible supporters of these animals.
Yes. And I think also Prince William's had even a role in the... enforcing finally the Chinese government to ban ivory, the legal market of ivory in China, beginning this year. I think behind the scenes, a few figures had a role, and I think Prince William's also had a role. He's a great asset for wildlife around the world.
Yeah, that's what when I see him, I think, man, if the rhinos and the pangolins and elephants only knew.
He said something very funny at the conference in his speech, funny and sad at the same time, that he went to Africa visiting a place where reserved for rhinos, and basically said that it's kind of sickening and crazy to for him to see that the rhino had almost more bodyguards than he has.
Yeah, I played it on the radio when he said it.
It's crazy.
And I mean, when he said that speech, it does. It drives you nuts. And I just wanted to hear your feedback on him because I see it and I get frustrated like you were explaining with these things. But then you see him walk out there and, man, you just get hope. It's like watching Luke Skywalker in Star Wars.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like he's like superhero. Well, here's how to reach out to this organization that have a unique way of tackling this stuff. As Andrea said, they are dealing with the investigation to figure out who is buying it, who is trading it, where is it coming and going from. And these are the ways to stop it. They have a lot of other investigations coming, and you can learn about what they do at their website, which is elephantleague.org. At that website, you can use an email contact form to reach them, or you can use info@elephantleague.org. They have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts, which you can add and then share their information or interact with them there. You can find the radio feature, the full-length interview, all their contact information, their previous appearance on the show, and all of our other Helping Hand segments archived at hawaiipublicradio.org. Just look for Helping Hand. And you've got this, the film that Leo DiCaprio, when is give a final plug, when is that due and what's it called?
I think that will be premiere at the end of January 19, so a few months from now. The temporary working title is Sea of Shadows. It might change, but it's probably the most important film documentary ever made on the specific issue of Toto Aba trafficking and the possible extinction of the vaquita.
And Leo, he's right there with his company, huh? He seems to have done a lot for all these animals as well.
Yeah, he's very close to various causes, and he likes to help and to attach his name to worthy causes, of course, and especially when you need some media power behind, like in the case of the vaquita in Mexico, we really need all possible help to push the Mexican government to finally do the right thing, and they don't have a lot of time to do it. So hopefully this film will help, and also DiCaprio's role will help as well.
Do you guys get rated by Charity Navigator?
We are on GuideStar. We are gold on GuideStar.
Okay. Yeah, I just say that other one because our company, our station, gets the Charity Navigator. We get like a 4-star thing, and then we can brag about it on the radio and stuff. And it's just another way to sort of help. And I know what GuideStar is too. It's another one of these rating services.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just suggested only because if you ended up getting Charity Navigator to give you that high ranking, it does help people who are...
Absolutely.
Because there's so many nonprofits all doing, you're doing a very specific thing, but lots of other ones are out there. And so it gets tough for people, huh? Because they want to donate, but there's a million sources.
The problem with Charity Navigator is that they begin ranking NGOs only when they raise at least $1 million per year. And sadly, we are not there yet.
Okay. No, that explains
it. That's the reason. Yes.
Well, you're grassroots, dude. And you've got your heart in it. And it's just always special to have Andrea Crosta. He is the executive director, co-founder of one of the most unique nonprofits that's battling to save these animals through heavy undercover investigations that reveal intelligence that then can help lock these people up, like has been the case in Thailand. It's Elephant Action League, and thrilled to have you back on Helping Hand. Really means a lot, and in any moment when you feel like you wish there was more inspiration or you're needing some, I hope you know there are so many people out there who are proud of what you're doing and who thank you for fighting on behalf of these animals.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your kind words. It gives me a lot of strength, and it's always a great, great pleasure to be with you. I mean, your help is really important for us because, there's so much noise out there, and for us, media, the collaboration with the media is super important, especially media who understand what we do, because you believe me, I'm not saying just because I'm talking with you, but you are the one who all the time explain better than anyone else what we do. I wish I had people in my organization actually that knows that well. Sometimes I have, wait, do you know what you're doing? So you are really incredibly spot on every time you explain what we do. So perfect.